Maybe you haven't noticed, but it's been a bit colder of late. Though, by the time this airs on Friday, the mercury is supposed to be on the rise with the promise of snow. And by cold, I am making light of the below zero temperatures we've had, and with enough cold days to feel like an actual winter. I have a couple of friends who were in the lower 48 for extended stays, and this is what they came home to, which brings a smile to my face. Welcome home indeed. In Alaska, there is always something to prepare for, irrespective of the season. Some of the times, it's just a matter of increasing the comfort level, but at other times it can very much be a matter of life and death. And I don't mean for that to sound like some sort of manufactured drama. It's just our reality, and one I think we all pretty much embrace, or we wouldn't live here. The cold got me to thinking about being prepared for just that, the cold. So even as our forecast calls for a bit of warming to our area, let's consider the threats posed by this time of year. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Our recent cold days have been something I've felt even a bit more than normal. That's because the heater core is out on my Jeep that I drive to work and back with. It's an old Jeep and has a tremendous talent for being able to acquire moisture inside, which means I've often, of late, had to scrape more ice from the inside of my windows than outside. I've also taken to dressing warmer than I would with a functioning heater and defrost. A new heater core is on the way, and I'm hopeful it's going to get swapped out soon and improve my driving experience. But to paraphrase that line from that song, hey baby, it's cold inside. I remember the first time, living in Alaska, that I thought it was really cold. My third year in Alaska, living in Non-Dalton, I was house-sitting for someone. It was a sweet deal. No rent, and all I had to pay for was heating fuel. There were a few quirks with the situation. There was no indoor bathroom and no shower. An outhouse down the trail and a steam bath were what I had at home, and I was able to use the shower at the school. The house was small, and a combination of wood stove and Toyo stove kept it nice and toasty. The outhouse? Well, let's just say I'm glad that happened when I was in my 20s, as nighttime bathroom breaks are more frequent in more recent years, and it's hard to get excited about walking to the outhouse in the middle of the night in sub-zero temperatures. It certainly was some kind of adventure. But I digress somewhat. During that third year, during winter, we had a three-week stretch where the needle on the thermometer outside the kitchen window never left its low point of minus 20. It sat there the whole 3 weeks. My four-wheeler struggled enough that I just walked to school and back each day. And I remember a specific moment when it really hit home about just how cold it was. I had a piece of wood that just wasn't quite small enough to go into the stove. I needed to split it. The splitting log and axe were maybe 15 feet beyond the front door. I slipped on my boots, went out the door, picked up the axe, and split it on the first try. I was outside literally probably less than 90 seconds. Imagine my surprise when I got back in and my fingertips were white and had no feeling. What I experienced that day was what's called superficial frostbite. It gave me a whole new level of appreciation for just how quickly things can turn both bad and cold, and created a memory that I've never forgotten. Most of us know that the two biggest threats are hypothermia and frostbite. I'll freely admit, I'm not sure how much I knew about each of those back then, nor how much of a threat they could be, at least when you're not fully prepared or careful. In my experience, diligence is required at all times. If you have some exposed skin or weight on something, telling yourself you'll get to it in a moment, well, that can be all it takes for a bad moment to set in. The weather doesn't care an iota that you just need another 2 minutes to top off your tank or get that ratchet strap reattached. It doesn't take something as big as a plane crashing through a frozen lake for winter weather to negatively impact you. Hypothermia is a medical emergency that occurs when the body's temperature drops low enough that it keeps you from functioning normally. When your body's core temperature starts to tick below the normal 98.6, well, that's when it's time to run up the Danger Will Robinson flag. The early signs often involve a lot of things that end with the sound umble, stumbling around, fumbling with things, and mumbling. Speech starts to become slurred, shaking happens, you begin to lose your dexterity. Your thoughts and conversations can become jumbled, yet another umble. And again, that's the early stuff. Once your core body temp drops to about 3 or 4 degrees below normal, say 95 degrees or a bit less, moderate hypothermia sets in. It doesn't sound like a lot, does it? A few degrees. But it is most certainly cause for alarm. Motor skills continue to erode, as does just about everything else. Someone with this stage feels dazed and often will shiver violently. They also start to make really bad or irrational decisions, like trying to strip off their clothes. Severe hypothermia, the drop below 92 degrees, can lead to continued strong shaking, interrupted by pauses of calm. Eventually, the shaking ceases and calm takes over. People at this stage might fall to the ground, be unable to walk, or try to curl up in a ball. The skin gets pale, or, for people like me, even more pale, and the pupils dilate. The heart starts to slow, and muscles contract. Dropping further, at 90 degrees, the body shuts off blood flow to peripheral areas and keeps it centered on the head and core, and reduces both breathing and heart rate, in an all-out attempt to keep the body alive at all cost. In the high 80s, the body seems frozen. The person looks dead but is still alive. Rescue is still possible with professional medical care. I had a buddy who went through the ice a number of years ago and was in the water for a long time. His core temperature dropped to somewhere around 90. I don't remember the exact temp. And it took a lot to get him back. Prevention of hypothermia. Prevention is actually the key. Once things start dropping, it's hard to get things back. It's like coming down a steep mountain. Getting that elevation back takes work. Some of the key things are to stay hydrated, stay dry, and stay warm. Move around, drink regularly. Dehydration leads to a decrease in body temperature and reduces mental clarity, which is bad any time, but particularly so in cold situations. Stay dry and wear the right clothing, something I've harped on during past episodes. No cotton clothing and keep what you're wearing dry. Change out if things become too wet. Water causes hypothermia 25 times faster than cold air. Also, layer your clothing and adjust while you're outside. Layers help control heat loss and cut down on sweat. Moving on to frostbite. Frostbite is what I have to more often constantly remind myself about when I'm outdoors. Frostbite is freezing of the skin and underlying tissues. First, your skin becomes very cold and red, then numb, hard, and pale. Frostbite is most common on body parts likely to be exposed when we're outside in the cold. Fingers, nose, ears, cheeks, and skin. Exposed skin is a bad idea in some of the temperatures that we've had lately. Frostbite can occur on skin covered by gloves or other clothing too, though. An example, for me anyway, is my throttle thumb on my Snowgo, combined with gloves that are too thin. A few years back, my heat to my grips went out, and the gloves I had on were too thin. I was inching up on frostbite on my thumb because of the situation. Frostbite can occur within seconds in extreme cold or windy conditions in one of two stages, superficial or deep. I found out about that during my very, very short jaunt to split that piece of wood that year. With superficial frostbite, the layers of skin freeze, the area goes white, there is no sensation, and the skin can feel soft or slushy. Deep frostbite goes deeper, literally and figuratively. The freezing goes beyond the skin and can be in the muscle or even bone deep. Skin appears white, feels hard and waxy, and there's no sensation. Frostbite can lead to a loss of limbs, such as fingers or toes in most cases. Intense pain and nausea can follow the period where everything just feels numb. Most types of frostbite require medical attention because it can cause real damage to the skin, tissues, muscle, and bones, with complications to include infection and nerve damage. If someone is dealing with both, frostbite and hypothermia, treat the hypothermia first. The core body temperature will always have priority over a frostbitten area. A mild version of frostbite is called frost nip. This is where freezing happens to the top layer of skin. Frost nip most commonly occurs on the nose, cheeks, ears, and fingers. Rewarming the affected area can be done by placing it on another person's warm skin or by covering it up with dry warm garments such as a face mask, hat, or glove. The skin will look white and may or may not have sensation. Don't rub the affected area, as ice crystals in the skin can cause damage. The bottom line for both hypothermia and frostbite: proper preparation from the get-go. Be aware of outdoor conditions, what it is you're doing, and any skin that's exposed. Try to stay dry and warm. And keep in mind that weather like we've recently had provides for prime conditions for both of these to be an issue. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.